We are live. It took us a while with the holidays and everything to put together this talk, but we thought it's the right time to get together again and share some of the fantastic things we've been through these past years with Elrond, especially since we are reaching the point where we can celebrate 1 year of Elrond Mainnet without any downtime. So fingers crossed. And without further ado, I'd like to present the special guest for today. His name is Sever. You probably heard of him. He's omnipresent, everywhere, anytime, night and day. And I think the best thing to do is to let him introduce himself. So welcome, Sever.
Hey, team. Happy to be here. Hey, Eddie. Thank you for inviting me at the Elrond Talks. I'm an eager fan and watcher of the talk, so it's an honor for me to be here. Thank you.
Great. That's awesome. Right. We have a habit of asking all the guests what is something that you do, something that is characteristic to you, something that is human. Let's dig into your human side and prove that you are not this android that presents his hologram on these talks. So tell us something that an android could not do.
That's impossible. I barely compute this stuff. So ever since I joined Elrond, I spend most of my waking moments like working for Elrond. That's definitely not robot stuff. It's very human. So what's happening at Elrond is very human. But I'm a human myself. I don't know. I'm 40 years old. I have a family. I have two kids. I try to spend as much time with my family and kids as much as I can. To tell you the truth, so whenever I speak to people and whenever I introduce myself to a new audience, I tell them, you know, my name is Sever. I'm from the internet, right?
right.
because you know, just like everyone else, you know, I'm I was born in a certain country, educated in a certain language, thought to believe in a certain religion, raised in a certain culture, and so on. Also, like most of you here, the way I relate. You know, and sometimes I think about myself and I relate, you know, not in like the language I speak or where I'm from, but rather what are my passions, what really resonates with me and how I interact with people. I care about the world with me and my work. And that's, you know, that's a lot of it is digital and a lot of it is connected with the internet. So the internet has really become a part of me. So Eddie, you asking me now to prove that I'm human, I will fail miserably here. I'm Sever from the internet, man. Sorry to disappoint.
Okay, that's a good definition of Sever. Sever from the internet. I've met Sever back in 2019, I think. We've known each other from some online chat rooms on Telegram before that, 2017, 2018. But we've met in person in 2019, and his charisma and his passion for blockchain is really contagious, and the way he explains things, you know, makes everything else around him seem super easy. Whenever there used to be a problem with the testnet, everything was made, no problem, we'll just talk to the devs, we'll fix this, we'll get a new release up and running, no problem. Sever, no problem. So he's a really impacting figure from the early days of Elrond, the battle of nodes and everything. So I think it's really good from time to time to take a break, make a step back and look at what has been accomplished so far. Look at the trajectory of the project and look how things have developed over time. And when you do that with a 1 week period or one month period, you might get some perspective. But when you take it back and look at years, the perspective changes a lot. So I've heard somebody say a while ago that if you look at Bitcoin, at any 3 year period in Bitcoin, there's always, you always end up winning. Any 3 year period, right? You start January 2017, January 2020, for sure there's
an increase. So we don't want to look at Bitcoin, we want to look at Elrond. And we have also 3 years, right? 2018, 19, and 20. And we are now in 2021. So who better than Sever to take us through this trip to this memory lane and help us gain this perspective? There was a recent tweet from Benjamin regarding the last year's GitHub commits, and Elrond is clear winner there with more than 11,000 GitHub commits. And that's what I want to look today at, perspective. So the stage is yours, Sever.
Yeah, thank you, Eddie. Yeah, it's been quite a ride. And, you know, after every major accomplishment and after every major push and marathon, we always say, well, it's just the beginning. Also, we say in the office, good morning at any time of the day, just because, you know, we always acknowledge that work is just getting started. So I think, Eddie, I think you should mute your keyboard or whatever. Anyway, so I joined Elrond in at the end of 2019, and Elrond was already a well-established team and product and project. But I think the Elrond story, so I've heard it a number of times. I can briefly say it here. So the Elrond story, I think, started with Benjamin and Lucian Minku. They were involved in the crypto space. They were looking at projects and technology and so on. And I there was like, you know, this is not good enough. And the world needs to do better. And you know how Benjamin is, always thinking at things at the large scale. So, you know, he didn't want to make a blockchain that's a little bit better. He wanted to make a blockchain that's 1,000 times better. He didn't want to make, a network that has more people in it, but a network that is for everyone in the world, right? And he wanted to launch this project not, you know, somewhere in Romania or whatever, but directly on Binance, right? So he always set the goal super, super high and super, super hard. And it's always his vision. It was his vision that got like a lot of awesome, awesome people around him. And, a lot of them didn't even, so like a lot of the core developers that joined in the beginning didn't even think this is possible, right? But, they spent time, they researched, they spoke, and Benny kept pushing and Lucian and so on. So finally they were able to come up with a prototype, and they were able to show it to people and to demonstrate it. And it was pretty, pretty crazy how, you know, this crazy idea of having a blockchain that's 1,000 times better was able to actually take form under the skilled minds and hands of these people. So, after a very hard part where Benjamin and Lucian basically funded the project on their own, they were able to prove that their idea and the concept of a sharded architecture, which was also like kind of like a dream at the time, they actually demonstrated, they created the pilot, they demonstrated it works, and they were able to secure investment from, funds that, would probably most companies starting would never dream, like getting, like, I don't know, Electric Capital, Maven Level, whatever, and they, Binance, right? So it debuted on Binance. I think it was exactly 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. So it was also in July. It was also in July after, like, long fights, to get the company set up, to get the team ready for the IEO and so on. There was this period of time where the standard raise, let's say, for an ICO was like, I don't know, $30 million or whatever. And Benjamin and the team decided to just go for $5 million. And this is how the crazy story of Elrond debuted on Binance with a $5 million private public sale raise. And then the madness started. And it was just, 12 people, one prototype, $5 million, and Binance, right? I think this is like this is Elrond at the time in a nutshell. And then, people got very much, so Elrond got a lot of exposure because of the Binance IEO and so on. So a lot of people came in the community and they were curious about, what is Elrond and how can these crazy guys come up with an idea that, is 1,000 times better and who can do it and so on. But, always I think the team and then the hardcore community and the people who are there always demonstrated that they really are hardcore. They believe, they want to do, and they push as hard as they can. You can see it, right? Because then immediately after, like the team grew. When I joined, there were like 20 people. And already Elrond was a well-known project. There were like, I don't know, 5,000 people in Telegram, almost 20,000 people on Twitter, which was, wow, especially
crazy.
For a project in Romania, yeah, and like a market cap of like $20 million, or which was, you know, pretty insane. And it was at the time when I joined Elrond Network. So funny story, Benjamin read, I was writing stuff about, you know, projects on the internet. I was like kind of like an influencer, but a stupid kind of influencer. I never took money or anything. I was just writing. I was hoping to land a consultancy job actually at the time in crypto. And Benjamin read my review of Elrond. It's like, wow, this is pretty good written. So are you a developer? No. So like this was like my answering no to that question was almost the end of my story with Elrond. But Benjamin said, okay, let's talk and, you know, come to the office and we'll try it out and I'll give you a task and see how you can handle it. And he gave me Battle of Nodes, which was like, yeah, which
easy.
Was like completely crazy at the time. So I knew nothing about Elrond. I knew nothing about the community. There was very little also validator community, so to speak. I think you, Eddie, started it, right?
Was right, right. Riot? Right, right. It was a Riot chat. We started the chat on the 19th of April in 2019, but that was just to test the communication settings in the Riot, because all the validators used to be on Riot, right? I remember the Cosmos days and all that. So that's why we started it there.
Yeah. It was crazy. But then I came and I honestly didn't like Riot very much. And we said, let's just move to Telegram and, you know, kind of like merge the communities from there. So we started with Battle of Nodes. And I remember the first thing I was doing, I was like contacting all the big staking providers like, hey, man, we're launching an incentivized testnet and so on. Come join. I was, you know, making calculations like how much can they earn and what a great network it is. And like nobody really cared. Right. So it's like, oh, it was a lot of discussing and convincing people and announcing and so on. But amazingly, people from the community wanted to be validators, right? And this was like a hard mission because I wasn't a validator myself. I'm not a developer. I'm a tech guy, but I'm not a developer. I'm definitely not a Linux guy. So I'm a Windows guy. And this was like a super, super hard challenge for me. It was a big learning process for me. And I took the opportunity to learn alongside the community. And I think Battle of Nodes was one of those crazy, crazy stories that got people to come together and to stay together, to stick together as a team. We were incredibly excited at that time that we had like 800 nodes from the community joining. We thought, wow, unprecedented,
crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
And here we are with 3,200 nodes on the mainnet, right? So like, what a road.
What a ride.
That, yeah. Yeah. What a ride. And so like after Battle of Nodes, or like during Battle of Nodes, obviously the main question around Elrond was when mainnet, right? When mainnet, we were supposed to launch, I think, in end of 2019.
There's always a when question, right?
Yeah. Always a when question, right?
After that, yeah. Something changes, but when? People want everything now. That's why people live in the moment. They want everything now. So like you said, I think one of the biggest wins of this project is the human resource. I think one of the biggest achievements of Benjamin and Lucian, both Lucians, was gathering this team and forming this team as a family and establishing Elrond as their baby. You know, they came up with it, right? They had the idea, they had the dream, right? I want to build something big. I want to build a highway for the new internet. So people having big dreams oftentimes fail because they fail to accompany those dreams with the right team, with the right resources behind it. But bringing together the right kind of people that are passionate, you know, I think that's one of the big secrets of Elrond. And really for the bootstrapping of the testnet, I think one of the key points was bringing Sever into the equation, you know, and what you did was bridge this gap between the community, the developers, the validators, and the team. And this was no longer something unreachable. The blockchain was tied together and the development was so much faster. Right.
It's still fast. It's still fast, but I think what happened then, and you're right, I think the development of like the application which is ready to stand on its own in a real world environment happened a lot faster, right? Because right. What happened there, like I remember I was in the office, like the guys were like, it's working, you know, I set up all these nodes on DigitalOcean and so on, let's launch it. And then we had all these people with like 10 nodes running on an old laptop or whatever. And then right. we saw some limitations in the protocol, which were not supposed to happen in the lab environment, but blockchain is not a lab environment, it's a real world environment. So it was such a push in the right direction to make the Elrond protocol not only fast, scalable, but also resilient. And I think I think this was great. So anyway, so Battle of Nodes happened. It was great. The question was like, when mainnet? So eventually we got to the mainnet, which was like almost 1 year ago. So like I think in 9 days we're 1 year old. And finally we launched the mainnet. It was like an awesome event. It was like full of emotions from everyone involved. Launching a mainnet with what we wanted to be first, like 1,000 nodes, then 1,500 nodes. And then because there was so much overcommitment of staking and people who wanted to validate their nodes, we ended up launching with 2,169 nodes. So in case you wonder where this crazy number is coming from, we wanted to make good on our promise about like the promised APR, what was there at that time. So in order to be able to make it happen, we had to adjust. We had to adjust basically the number of nodes and the size of the network. So we chose to go to 2,169 nodes. And, you know, launching that was kind of an incredible moment. If you guys remember like the event and everyone's face is like how happy and like absolutely crushed everyone was. So that was an absolutely great moment and a great achievement. And, you know, if you're following Elrond up to that point, like the journey until that point, like, before the pilot, the IEO, all the test phase leading up to the mainnet launch, and finally the mainnet launch, everyone said like, finally, you know, we did it, like kind of like we reached a destination. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we basically just reached the starting line because, you know, with the mainnet launch, the next questions started to appear. Admin, when staking, when smart contracts, when tokens, right? So a lot of development and a lot of unslept nights and so on. And also a lot of more people joining the network. Finally, now the Elrond network has had smart contracts since like 6 months ago, also tokens and also staking. So a lot of progress has been done, and it's amazing if you think about it. You know, when you're in crypto, things feel like kind of like interstellar, right? When, you know, 1 hour on planet whatever was 7 years.
Different, yeah.
Yeah. So like there's like this gravitational pull to crypto that sends ripples throughout space time, whatever, because everything seems to happen so fast in crypto, and it's never fast enough. And when you step back, it's like actually, you know, lightning fast, right? So in a very short period of time, we had all these things live on the mainnet. And of course, the next questions come, when MyR, right? When more staking, when more validator nodes and so on. So so then also MyR launched, and it was, I think it was an epic app launch. Yeah. It was filled with problems and delays and bugs, and anything you can imagine that can go wrong did go wrong, as is, of course, tradition. But I think all in all, it was a spectacular app launch. And I think now it got like to 200,000 people in like the first few weeks or so. Absolutely crazy.
Happy.
So, yeah, we could see we were watching the Blockchain Explorer, and like for the first time in a very long period of time, there was no block with an empty. There were no empty blocks.
No empty blocks, right?
All blocks had like some sort of transactions in it. And if you think about it, like even before like MyR exchange with the DeFi and so on, there's not that much running on the Elrond network except MyR and people staking, collecting rewards, and sending transactions to one another. And still, we are we are right now to more than 600,000 accounts with non-zero balances. So like non-zero, like some e-gold in it, they're probably more creative. We have, I think, close to 7 million transactions on the network. We're with 60% of the circulating supply staked. What other numbers we have there? We have almost 500,000 Myar accounts, right? And it keeps growing every day. And we have, I don't know, almost 300,000 people on Twitter, almost, 45,000 on Telegram, just on main channel with all the countries and so on. It's absolutely insane. 75 staking pools, I think almost 200 ecosystem partners of all kinds. And it's, again, it's absolutely amazing if you think about it. And if you just rewind back to our conversation like a few minutes ago, like where it started with, 12 people and $5 million and a prototype, and we are right now, and it's just been like two or let's say three years. And again, we're just getting started, right? Because we know, and everyone is expecting now what's going to happen. So when the Myar exchange will launch, I think this will be a milestone, which is equally important, I would say, to the launch of the mainnet and to the launch of Myar. So this is equally important. Why? Because, I mean, those were great achievements and very important on their own. But I think with Myar Exchange, everything that we have been building into the Elrond protocol right now and all the capabilities of the Elrond network and what makes it so attractive for all the partners they want to build on it. So like it's attractive technically, but business is about money and these guys want to make money and to earn money. So finally, with the Myar Exchange in place, their tokens will be able to have liquidity on the Elrond network. So like
right.
Things will move to like 10 million times faster right now, because you will see all of these partners that we have. I think you saw the announcement today with Hopper and so on. So like all of them agreed to mint a portion of their supply as ESDT tokens on Elrond, so their users can enjoy Myar Exchange, so they can enjoy liquidity, they can join pools and whatever. And
right, with Bridges.
Yeah. Now, so yes, with Bridges, but also it's possible like we have. So the e-gold supply. So our e-gold supply is now fragmented over a number of networks. So there's an e-gold ERC20 token. There's an e-gold BP20. Yeah, BP20 token on Binance Smart Chain and so on. So and we did that even before having functional bridges to those chains. We locked a certain portion of the supply in a publicly in a public address. We mentioned this address in the blog post, so like everyone can go there and check it. It's there untouched, and then you can go to the corresponding contract on the other network and you can see the same amount of tokens minted over there, right? So yeah. Like these basically cancel each other out, right? So we were able to do this even before the bridges. It will be a lot easier with bridges, but it will still be the same mechanism, locked right. on one side, minted right. on the other side. So it's essentially the same, right? So anyway, so Myar Exchange, I think, will bring an explosion of growth to the Elrond ecosystem, because in addition to our community and our partners and so on, the communities of the partners will also become Elrond users. They will have Myar, they will have accounts, and they will generate transactions for the Elrond network. So things will start finally having. We will start finally seeing those network effects, especially because of the Myar exchange. What another important part will be the Myar launchpad, and I think this will not be important because new projects will come to Elrond. Always new projects will come to Elrond, and they don't need the Myar launchpad to come to Elrond. But the purpose of the Myar launchpad is to make sure that we bring some of the best projects out there to Elrond. And
right.
whenever we see the potential that a project can be great, we can do it. We can bring it on Elrond, and we can support them. Not only to give them a network where they have the token, but they can have like the full support of the team and the experience and so on. So I think this is able to bring not only volume and not only number of projects and liquidity and so on, but also like big brands, big companies, and useful and valuable use cases.
Real value. Right? I think, like you mentioned, all these launches seem like the big thing, right? When the mainnet was launched, it was just fabulous, epic, the great thing. You would say okay, we've made it. But then the next launch, which is what was Maya, you know, it was built on top of the success of the main launch. So it was as important, but it was actually bigger because the growth was exponential. It's the mainnet combined with Maya together bring more value. And the next launch, the Maya Exchange launch, will combine the mainnet, right, the network with Maya, and will bring even more value with the exchange. So each of these huge, huge launches are, to me, I think, more important than the previous one. Although Maya Exchange will be probably the biggest launch so far, there will be other launches that will be even more important than the exchange. So building bricks like this, you know, it's just fabulous to see how things fall into place like a nicely done puzzle.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it's exactly like you said, right? Because what made Maya app, Maya Exchange, Maya Launchpad possible were the activation of those features in the protocol, kind of like smart contracts, like tokens, like relay transactions and all these things. And these building bricks, like you mentioned them, enabled the additional layer to be built on top of them. And while that layer is being built, because there are different teams working on Maya, on the Maya Exchange, Maya Launchpad, the core developers working on the Elrond protocol are already hard at work on the next things in the protocol, right? And I think we mentioned this a number of times. So what will happen next on Elrond, we will see a number of bridges. So we are building our own bridges to Ethereum and a number of other chains, but Ethereum is the most important one. This is why we're building this one ourselves. We want to make sure that that our knowledge is put into this bridge, so we are able to fully migrate not only, you know, ERC-20 tokens, but also ERC-721 tokens, and more importantly, ERC-1155 tokens, which are the smart contracts in which multiple types of fungible tokens, semi-fungible tokens, and NFT tokens can live in together at once, right? So I think this is important, and this is big, and I think those tokens on the Ethereum network are looking to break free of their smart contracts and to come natively live in the Elrond protocol, and you know have a different way of being interacted with, a different price for minting, transferring, and a different kind of ownership, where the tokens are directly attached to the account instead of living inside of a third-party smart contract that someone else owns or nobody owns, and just assigned to a certain account, right? So, like, to a certain extent, NFTs on like Ethereum and the other blockchains are kind of like money in the bank that is assigned to you, whereas NFTs and tokens and so on Elrond are money in your pocket. And I think this is this will be a big and important implication, not only from like a psychology of ownership, but also for the legal implication of ownership, right? And I think this, you know, once people realize and once NFT starts to take off beyond art and to go into any kind of business vertical where, you know, authenticity, uniqueness, and provenance is needed, which is, I don't know, a lot of them, all of them, maybe, right? Traceability, right? I think people will realize just how uniquely powerful the Elrond protocol is. And if nothing else, I think at least a lot of people who want to own nice pictures and game items and so on, they will be happy to own them in their phone, in their pocket, and not on some website on the internet, right?
That's right.
I think, yeah. So
real
ownership. And this is why I wanted to, I spoke about this, because we don't speak about it enough, but the NFT, the Maya NFT marketplace is coming. And it's also very close. We don't put too much highlight on it, but it's coming.
It's coming, guys.
It's going to change a lot of things. There are already some like internal working versions, and it's beautifully intuitive, right? It's like owning an NFT. I'm not sure how many of you out there already own NFTs on like OpenSea or Rarible or whatever. But you know how that experience is. You have to go to a website, sign in with MetaMask, and then you need to understand that the NFT that you own on OpenSea, you cannot own it on Rarible, right? Because they live in different smart contracts. Whereas on Elrond, you will be able to own your own NFT and see it in your value feed, and you can send it to your friends and they will see it in their own value feed. And, you know, they will be tradable on the MyR NFT marketplace or on any other kind of marketplace that, you know, our partners decide to build, or, you know, you out there decide to build.
That sounds awesome. I look forward to that because I really think, like you said, real ownership is something that we as a society have forgotten. Ever since we used to own gold and trade gold coins, you know, now everything goes through a bank. So if a transaction is wrong, I just call the bank and have them fix it for me, right? We don't know how to hold on to our keys, and we see this every day with people getting scammed by scammers in Telegram, you know, asking for trying to help them help, you know, and asking for the seed phrase or to logging in some sketchy website. So people need to realize the importance of really owning something and keeping ownership of these keys or these NFTs, you know. So real ownership is a big thing. So I'm really looking forward to that.
This is, I think, I mean, you're completely right with that. And this is why I love MyR so much. I don't know if you guys use, probably everyone uses, I use it, the function to save an encrypted copy of the private key of the, let's say, secret phrase in the cloud, right? Because restoring access to the cloud is so easy with email, with phone, and so on. And if you encrypt it with a password, well, a good enough password, not even Apple or Google can access it, right? Because this is the beauty of encryption, right? So you can completely lose your phone, lose your I don't know, paper that is written on it, can catch fire, whatever. Your parents can throw it out while cleaning your room or whatever, and it's still safe in the cloud, because the cloud is a beautiful thing, right? It's redundant, it's widely available, and I think, you know, it speaks a lot to where we are right now from a technology point of view, that you no longer hang on to a small piece of paper with your life, like, oh, that's where my money is, on this piece of paper, right? So I think the technology is still not good enough, or not serving people good enough in regards with like safeguarding their private keys and so on. And we want to do better. I think you remember in the beginning we were discussing about MyR, and there's still a work in progress, and it's coming, the social recovery mechanism, right? Where you select a few people from your address book, and you select them as, let's say, people who can together recover access to your wallet in case, you know, you lose access to it you lose your encrypted backup or whatever. So the three of them can get together and restore access to your wallet, and you will be able to retrieve money out of it. I think there are a number of things that can happen, and they will happen, and MyR will also have this. And you know, it's super exciting to see in the future.
Looking forward to MyR 2.0.
Yeah, we're already also discussing MyR 3.0. No. It's a product that we love so much, and so many ideas are going into it that they need to be split into tiers. It's a project that will see super long term development, right?
Having a tool that allows a lot of people to come together and interact with blockchain so easily, you know, it's so powerful. I mean, I already see MyR Exchange coming as close as possible to MyR, you know, maybe integrating sometime in the future. But giving access to people to all these new technologies, to DeFi with the simplicity of MyR is just mind-blowing. And I can't even fathom where are we getting with this, you know. I can't even imagine how far we can go with this, because up until now, I remember trying to interact with some other exchanges, DeFi, you know, and it's always a pain, right? Installing some extensions and logging in with this and that, you know. But if people can do this with ease, with a phone, with MyR, you know, like you said, to abstract the necessity of remembering 24 words, just having it at your fingertips the future is just insane. I mean, there's no limit to what the community can contribute with all these tools at their fingertips.
Yeah, I think we were discussing this when we integrated with Unicrypt, I think it was.
Unicrypt, yeah.
So they're doing a set of tools for that allows anyone to create not only their own token but like their own token economy, right? With like vesting schedule and distribution and issuance, minting, burning, whatever. Locking, vesting, I don't know, all those mechanisms, right? And we were discussing like this is kind of like an important blockchain moment, right? Because, you know, the web had its moment when anyone could create its own their own website. Mobiles had their moment when anyone could all of a sudden create their own app. And now I think blockchain will have its moment when anyone will be able to create their own token, right? And I think you've seen how easy enough it is to create tokens on Elrond. If you go to explore.elrond.com/tokens, you see like, I don't know, 7 or 8 pages of tokens
already.
Yeah. And I think those of you using the testnet or the devnet wallets can also get a glimpse of how the interface of creating a token and creating of NFT already looks like, and how easy it is and how inexpensive it is. So these things are only going to get better. And I agree with you, Eddie. So like once the tools are super easy to use, it's no longer going to be the crypto geeks that will be the creators in the space, but it will be any creator in the space. So like all the ideas, all the creative energy and so on, anyone will be finally able to express themselves with blockchain technology as well, just because these tools will become simpler and simpler to use. So exciting times right ahead.
Right. So Elrond had this vision from the start, put the tools of these new technologies in the hands of everybody. And that's why it's calling itself the internet blockchain, right? With internet scale for everybody. Not for the select few that know how to operate a node, or it's for everybody. So it's also cheap, it's also fast. So having the right vision surely helps. Right. Mm-hmm. We've kind of went through what we've had so far. We've went with the next few things like Myer Exchange, the Launchpad, the NFT Marketplace. Maybe mention also the DeFi 2.0 modules, right? Tokenization, lending, synthetics.
Yeah. So already, if you guys, so for those of you following the Elrond Tech weekly threads, you can see there exactly what the developers are working on, and lending has been in the works for a few weeks already, and I think lending is going to be one of the first modules to be added on top of the Myer Exchange after its launch, and then. Yeah, I mean, synthetics. So I like synthetics in a way of stable coins and so on, not so much in forms of like options and derivatives and so on. But I think those have to come. I mean, they are financial instruments that, are popular and people use it, even though I personally believe they're shortcuts to getting wrecked, you know, leverage trading and options and put and call and put options and whatever. So smart people are able to use them to hedge against risks, but you know, a lot of people will get wrecked doing that, so I'm not particularly looking forward to those. But anyway, there are a number of things that are being worked on right now. So I was in the office for 2 days. I was in the office. I work remote, but I was in the office 2 days ago, and Benjamin is like, guys, while everyone is on vacation, we'll have the hottest August ever, right? Like, oh, we were like,
you know, okay.
How do I tell my wife, you know? So, but you know,
she's all watching.
All jokes aside. So, because everything is now lined up with like the Myer Exchange, Myer Launchpad, and so on. So, like, we're looking forward to a crazy, crazy, crazy month where a lot of things, not only these, but a lot of things that will be. We have been preparing and we have been working on are finally coming to fruition. So I think we're going to take the opportunity with the Myer Exchange and do a super, super powerful push. I don't want to say hyper growth because it gives me, you know, anxiety and kind of Vietnam-like flashbacks, like, yeah. But we're probably looking forward to a similar period like that. And I think it's welcome and it's needed. And, we have the energy for it. So let's do it. it's time to build.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to go through maybe an overview, just points of the market cap, just numbers. Do you have that
points of the market cap?
Yeah, just 2019 we started, you said, with 5 million, right? Mm. That was the IEO.
Yeah. So what I remember is like the initial investment was $5 million.
Right.
And then I think Elrond at mainnet launch was like, I don't know, $30 or $40 million market cap, something like that. I think it peaked when Eagle, listed on Binance for the first time. I think it was like the Eagle price was like $35, which was like, I don't know, $70 million or what was that? Anyway, so we look at these numbers, but it's like, you know, markets move up and down. Elrond always moves forward, right? So like, these are nice indicators, but until any coin on this planet can break away from Bitcoin, it doesn't really matter all that much, right? Because Bitcoin goes up and down, and the whole market follows, and it can be very frustrating, and it's very tempting to lose yourself in like trying to get like feedback on your work from the market cap, right? If it goes up, you're doing well. If it goes down, you're doing bad, which is like completely wrong, right? So we've seen projects going up that have no sense being there, like, I don't know, meme coins, little scams or projects that have no value. We see undervalued projects all the time. And it's like, we want to, you know, stay away from that. I mean, it's fine. There's a market there, and we're aware of it, and it's important. But I think it's not healthy for us to follow those numbers, because all the hard work we're putting in and all the things that are being worked on and all the pieces coming together are coming together to something that is way beyond, momentarily speculation. There's this Twitter account I'm following. I think it's called Vision or something. And they have like simple black and white visualizations, and there was like one with like a trading chart, and you know, it's like ups and downs on a short period of time, and it says timing, and then there's another chart like zoomed out over 10 years, like, you know, ups and downs but constantly growing like so much, right? So like it's growing from bottom left to top right, and that's called time in, right? So We're the time in guys. We put in the time, and we only look for the long term of things. And you know, if we zoom out and we zoom out from all the zigzags of whatever speculators are doing and so on, value created will translate in value for everyone that participates on the long term. So you know, that's all that matters, right? And you can just look at any kind of like the history. Also, like how the internet happened with the .com bubble and like all the pets .com, like the crazy valuations and so on, and a lot of the some of the best companies almost going bankrupt or you know, almost market share dropping to nothing, but the best of them didn't stop working, right? Amazon didn't stop working when their shares plummeted like 90% or whatever, and the guys who didn't stop working and who put in the time and the work, they are well rewarded today because their companies and their products have finally executed on the vision that they had for the world and have made the world a better place. And this is what we want to do at Elrond as well.
Actually, that's what I was going to with the market cap review. You know, it's just a small indicator. Like if you add value day by day, Benjamin used to talk about this 1% every day, right? If you add value to what you do by contributing to the network, by developing, then in the end, the value will be reflected in the market. So if you look at the market zigzags, like you said, for a day, a week, a month, then maybe you get distracted. But if you take a step back and look yearly at these figures, you see the trend is clearly ascending, and you see the value is being reflected in the market. Maybe not as we would like it to be reflected, but the amount of work that is put into this project, into this ecosystem now, because it's not just a project anymore, is surely going to get reflected more and more, because I'd like to say Elrond is inevitable, you know. It's coming. It's there. It's coming. And the value will for sure be reflected in the price and in the market valuation. Okay, we've had a nice overview of perspective of. We can now have a bigger picture looking at all these years with Elrond, right? Where we started from, how we got here, and where we headed. So I'd like to maybe now have a look at the second year of Elrond Mainnet. And what does that mean for everybody, for the delegators, for the validators, for the ecosystem, for the scarcity of the token? So maybe, Sever, should I put up the screen with the token inflation?
I mean, if you want, I think people can read about that on their own. I just want to make a few points here. So we talked about the products that are coming to the Elrond network and that will drive attention and growth in terms of user accounts and transactions and so on. And I think this is the most important thing to mention here, and kind of a kind reminder to everyone about how the e-gold economic model is created, right? So if you remember when we migrated from the old Elrond with 20 billion tokens to the e-gold with 20 million tokens model. And also the old Elrond model had, long-term infinite supply because it had like 5% yearly issuance with no cap. So then now e-gold has a cap, which is pi. So like pi, like the number, the circle number, times 10 to the power of 7. So like 31,000,000.4 thing. This is important because, this already creates like a limited amount of the token, which gives it not only the utility value that it already has, but also a store of value property, which is kind of nice and interesting, and also can contribute to the security of the network, right? Because in a proof of stake economy, staking contributes towards the security of the network because on one hand, the validators put their e-gold at stake. So, having something at stake means that you you have something to lose, but you put it there in good faith because you know that you won't lose it because you will do good. So there will be no slashing and so on. So all these validators are contributing e-gold towards the security of the network. So like the more e-gold locked and the more valuable it is, the more expensive it gets to attack the network, because like the only known attack against the POS network is in a way similar to attacks against proof of work network, which basically means someone assumes control, right? Proof of work, they need to have 51% of the hash power, so like they need to buy a lot of computers or whatever mining equipment. Whereas in proof of stake, they need to buy enough coins and to be able to stake them and to become validators, and then to be lucky enough that those validators can be selected in the consensus group so they can collude and, put in some crazy transaction or double spending or whatever, make some money out of it. It's important. The economics are important actually for the security of the network, right? So Elrond has scarcity, but also like there's something nice, a property about the scarcity that it scales with adoption. So scarcity scales with adoption. This is because the issuance, so the yearly issuance, which is, you can see now on the screen, I think 10% in the first year, 9% in the second year, and so on, until it's like 0% in the 10th year and after that. So like no more e-gold will be issued. And beyond that, it's important to notice that all the transaction fees, so like all the fees for the transactions that happen over, let's say, a year, they offset issuance. So like in other words said, like if in 1 year, let's say there are 500,000 e-gold spent on transactions, there will be 500,000 e-gold less issued, right? So right. It can happen that with enough adoption, we never even reach the maximum supply of 31.4 million e-gold. Already, because transactions are happening, this will never be reached. And the more transactions that are happening, the scarcer the e-gold supply will be, right? I think there's a nice graphic and a nice presentation of that in the economic post about like e-gold, the currency, and it shows there like a scenario where it would stop issuing new coins in the fifth year of the network. So like in 4 years from now, which is like a crazy long time, but we were discussing before, is like nothing in crypto. So it can happen that in like 5 years from now, there are enough transactions on the network and there are enough transaction fees to offset issuance on the network that issuance no longer happens. This doesn't mean that validators no longer earn rewards, because as you know, validators earn either issuance or transactions or issuance plus transactions, right? So it was also in the same picture, like, you know, the more transactions on the Elrond network, the more fees collected, the more the validators can earn, right? Like, it was like a curve like this. So it started here, like 36%, for those of you who remember this, what a crazy time that was,
36.
Right? And then, yeah, and then it will go down, but then it will continue increasing again with adoption and more fees and so on, right? Which is like a powerful incentive for the validators, not only to leave the computer running, but also to be active players in the Elrond ecosystem and to advocate for its adoption, and not only to advocate, like tell people about it, but also build tools and so on. And we see a lot of that happening already, which is amazing, right?
Right.
And I'm looking forward to see what else can this amazing community of validators build after coming together after such a short period of time. And already we see products popping up. We have like network monitor products. We have tax products. We have, I don't know, all kinds of comparison tables, the epic bots from Dr. Delphi and so on, right? Hmm. So like, I'm curious where this will all end up. It's amazing.
Right. We have a transaction to zero issuance number here. So if during 2000, their first year of mainnet, we would have had an average of 1,376 transactions per second, which we didn't, then the issuance would have been zero. Right, so this graphic is widely available in many economic papers and post blog posts, you know. So you guys are
so scary to think about it, right? You only need 1,400 TPS to offset issuance completely, and the network can do 15,000 TPS with three shards,
right? With a current setting.
Yeah, do you remember the 50 shards in
2063, I think. 263,000. It's difficult for me to say. 263,000. Unbelievable. Yeah, and it was not a peak, Sever. It wasn't, okay, we managed to get that for 5 minutes. I think it went on like that for the whole weekend. And the network is booming.
Yeah. Pretty crazy stuff, right? Yeah. Pretty crazy stuff. And I think, you know, if you think about like the days of the internet, do you remember like 56K modems? Like downloading a file in like a 5 megabyte file in 15 minutes. Like, wow, I have internet, right? So who the hell was even thinking about the numbers that we do today? And like, I think Japan now broke the records with like 300 petabytes per second internet transfer, like something crazy like that. Like, what is that, right? And to think now we're looking at like 1,400 transactions per second. It's nothing. Think about hundreds of thousands of transactions per second, millions, right? Once this takes over and payments get embedded into everything, like really embedded into everything, like think about like, I don't know, an API, right? Like querying an API, sending the payment with the request for data. You already send the payment with the request for data, and then you just get it, right? It's so like all these will be built into the fabric of the internet, right? So like blockchain will definitely change everything. It's so like, this is so early, it's crazy.
It's the infrastructure inversion Andreas Antonopoulos was talking about, right? In the beginning, the internet was slow because it was running on the old infrastructure, on the phone lines, analog phone lines. Mm. After the new infrastructure was ready, the phone lines were running on the internet. Everything is running on the internet. So blockchain now is difficult, right? It runs on the old system. Going in and out of crypto is difficult, right? Regulations, banks, they're resistant, right? They don't want it. Once this picks up, you know, banking and everything will be done on the blockchain. So it's just bear with us while we get there, right? Once the infrastructure is in place, everything will run on the blockchain. So it's a matter of time. It's not if, it's when.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are thinking about blockchain like, oh, they will replace credit cards, they will replace banks and whatever. No, it's just a technology, right? It won't replace anything, but rather these like payment processors and banks and so on, they will adopt blockchain technology to make their services more efficient, more available, more secure, right? So like probably like a good thing, like I can still see people, you know, using like physical credit cards because, you know, people still love cash or whatever. They love the feeling of something in their hand. So I don't think cards are going away, but the transactions will probably be processed over the blockchain, right?
Right.
And this will result in like lower processing fees and lower, you know, fees overall when using a card, which is like 1 or 2% or 5%. Like, what the hell is that, right? If you think about it, right? So like, it's percent of the value, right? Whereas with blockchain, it's like a fixed transaction. So it's incredibly crazy to think how early this is, right? It's amazing. Right. So exciting. We're 1 year in.
Crazy. I forgot. I wanted to mention something for the people that have delegations active right now, the majority of them, I think. Mm-hmm. Once we get to year two, the issuance will be lower. This means there will be less e-gold entering the system in year two. This is very good for the scarcity of the token, right? And also because there will be less e-gold issued, the rewards will be lower, right? So all the staking providers will see somewhat lower APR year two. Mm. Not a lot lower, but the issuance will be different until we have those transactions to make up for all the issuance. So these numbers are available here, so you guys can get to our calculator. We'll leave it later in the chat and simulate all these scenarios: year two, year three, year five, year seven, mm-hmm. and you can estimate what the APR will be for every staking provider. So I just wanted to mention that as well.
Yeah. It is exciting, right? Like if you think about it, it's exactly a Bitcoin halving moment, right?
That's right. Bitcoin halving. Yeah. It happens yearly.
It happens yearly. It doesn't happen every 4 years, and it's not as brutal. Like, you know, you cut the reward in half, right?
Right.
Because I think those of you that read about Bitcoin and are engaged with Bitcoin since like the years before know the significance of halving events and what this does to, you know, it affects the supply and demand balance, right? Because supply kind of drops significantly. And then demand is probably the same or more with adoption and so on. So I think this is important. And also I think people will understand the importance of this and will, I think, celebrate the importance of this because we know what happened after every Bitcoin halving moment. We can just look in the history and we expect something similar to happen with the e-gold halving or let's say issuance reduction moment. I think this just needs a bit more communication on behalf of us, but also the staking providers towards the community. I see a lot of people delegating and staking, like the APR is like kind of like the goal, right? It's like not the value that you earn or the fact that you are earning passive income in a coin that is also a store of value and so on. So like, you know, good luck earning interest on Bitcoin. So everyone is like about APR, right? And I think this is also has something to do with the psychology of big numbers. This is why DeFi has seen so much success with the triple digits APY, even if it's like some useless coin and so on. People like the triple digits, right? For whatever reason. So this is just an education process because people need to be educated and we need to help them understand the financial instruments that are at play here, and that, you know, triple digit APY, whatever, they're unsustainable, right? And there is always a balance between how much is at stake, how much issuance is happening, and also how much transactions on the network are happening on all these things, and like the amount of e-gold that you get as a reward, also what that e-gold is worth, right?
Right.
So yeah, I think the more we are able to think in terms of value and kind of like decouple the value concept from, let's say, secondary figures like APR. So like APR is not is not a very good one. So like you should maybe think about like amount of dollars earned or amount of Bitcoin earned or whatever you want to compare, gold earned or whatever, something more stable, because APR is relative. But anyway, this is all a process. Like I said, we're super early in. Actually, staking started when? We're in July. It started basically in April that people were able to delegate
multiple
pools and so on. Yeah, well, it started with pre-staking and so on, but those were different. So pre-staking and active staking were different because they had fixed rewards. But I think ever since phase three kicked in, when you know there was basically no more limit towards staking. APR became variable because of the amount staked, because of the amount of e-gold in a pool, because of the value, the staking provider fee, and a number of the factors. So I think it's pretty complex. But I think, you know, in time, so like if you look back, it's like it makes so much sense now. And it's just, it's probably complex to people just starting out right now. We just need to help them.
That's right. It always helps looking back. I for one, remember starting phase 3.0 and I was puzzled, and I know lots of staking providers that were puzzled. And how does this work? Why is this? Why is that? But looking now back, it all makes much more sense. So that's why we wanted to have this episode where we want to gain perspective and gain the right perspective with the outlook in the future. So I think we've pretty much covered what we came here to discuss, right? We are about over an hour, so maybe it's time we head over for some questions. We had our friends from Helios and Istari and some other staking providers gather those questions for us in a chat, and also Sever sent a tweet earlier today asking for the questions in a Twitter thread. So we'll try to combine those. What do you say, Sever? Mm-hmm. I try to shout them out, the ones that I have, and you have your share of questions. How do you want to go about this?
Yeah, let's do one and one. Go, okay. You go first, please, and then I'll pick one from the thread and so on.
Okay. I have one from Sabine. Given the fast expansion you outlined for Elrond in the previous interview you had, this is for you. how many transactions do you reckon will be settled on Elrond by the end of 2021 daily? Ranges.
Mm-hmm. So, hey, Sabine, thank you for the question. So I was on a Romanian interview the other day, and I discussed this a bit there. So, you know, it's hard to make predictions, but I think with buyer exchange, things will drastically change, right? So we're like 20,000 transactions per day right now, more or less. I mean, it depends on spikes and so on. I think that's going to be maybe, I don't know, 200,000 or maybe 1 million transactions per day just because of buyer exchange. Because there are so many users there and so much anticipation, and there will be so many things that you can do with the Maiar exchange. Just, you know, I think, and I warn you guys, it gets addictive. You need to get this under control. You can harvest rewards every block, which is 6 seconds, right? So, you need to get a good schedule for this, because the number of transactions generated by the Maiar exchange is going to be crazy. So I will not be surprised by 1 million per day at the end of the year.
Harvesting becomes addictive.
It is, right? Because you need to compound those rewards. Compound, right?
And there's a problem. The Elrond transactions are very cheap, so you can afford to compound many times during the day. So we gotta keep all these in check.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, I got one with like 28 likes. Dr. Elrond's like, what got you most excited in the Elrond ecosystem right now? So I have to say, so like everyone is speaking about the Maiar exchange and the Maiar launchpad. So like my personal favorite is the NFT marketplace, because I look forward to unleashing creativity in a way that has not been done before on any other blockchain. So there's no, you know, if you think about like what's that app that allows you to mint your own NFTs for almost no cost and you can have it in your pocket, there is none. This is going to be crazy. This is going to be crazy, and I look forward to it, right? There are so many artists, there are so many like visual artists, music, games and so on. They're looking forward to get registered with Maiar and you know, drop NFTs in the marketplace. And this is by far the thing I'm most excited about.
Okay. Somebody will probably make a Sever NFT. For sure. Right. I'll take one from here. Actually, I'll take two. John Wheel says, is there a set goal for the number of daily transactions moving forward? There's no set goal. Elrond is building the internet highway and it's not setting the goal of 1, 2, 3, 5,000 cars or whatever. The infrastructure is there for everybody, anybody who wants to use it to use it. So there's no no update on this one. And there's another one saying, will we see insane APR if the transaction increase faster than assumed in this table? And yes, the APR will increase because the percentage from the fees that go to the validator rewards pool is the same. So if we see double these figures, then the APR, I assume, will be double. Am I right with this one, Sever?
So in a like-for-like scenario where, you know, ceteris paribus or whatever you want to call it, nothing changes. So yes, the answer is yes. But you have to think that with adoption and large number of transactions and so on, like where are these transactions coming from? So like are these companies that are looking to do bulk transactions on the Elrond network? And if so, you know, we can do the capacity, but should we maybe lower the price for these transactions to be able to happen at this scale, right? So it can happen that with so many transactions and so much demand for e-gold, also with the price and so on, we will have to readjust the transactions to keep them inexpensive, right? So I would not have like a linear progression and a direct dependency because there are more factors at play here.
All right, that makes total sense because the end goal is to have the infrastructure with accessible prices and with e-gold soaring, you know, these need to be adjusted. Right, your turn.
Okay, I have one here from Taco Horatio. It has 30 likes. He asked me if we're working with the European Union to build a digital coin on Elrond, right? Like, even if we were, I wouldn't be able to say it. And even if we weren't, I wouldn't be able to say it. So I will not say it. There is like another question also from him. Like, are there plans for a real-time countdown clock that shows how many e-gold are coming off the theoretical max supply? So this is what we were mentioning earlier. So like, I think when transactions start going crazy and the amount of e-gold that gets taken out of circulation is really meaningful, I think it makes sense to have it. So right now, if you look at all the transactions that have happened now, like 7 million, and you multiply them with a fraction of a cent, I don't know, it's like, it's not that much really, right? It's like, I don't know, 10 e-gold or whatever there, right? It's not significant, but also it hasn't started yet. And when this will start, I think such a counter, well, maybe not a counter, but like a periodic update or so on, this will be a cool metric to watch for sure.
That's great. I have another two questions here. One says, any update on the Elrond office in Miami?
Yeah, so we get this question a lot. So we actually have someone in Miami working for us, and it's not like an employer or so on. It's like a well-connected individual that, you know, goes there and kind of like lobbies for Elrond with various entities that are present in Miami or just based in the U.S. And they're very active and they're doing a lot of great work. So once our guy there, our maker, right? He's like a guy that makes things happen. So once our maker there tells us, hey man, so too many things are happening, get me some people here, we will, right? But for all purposes, like having an office in Miami, this is not pragmatical right now. We personally saw in the team what happened when Benjamin and Danny were there for like almost 2 months. We literally died, right? Because of the time zone difference. So they were working up at what was like 3 to 4 in the afternoon for us. So like we already had like half a day, let's say, or almost a full day we were spent, and they were just getting started, catching up, like, oh, okay, let's get to work. Like, oh. So it doesn't make too much sense right now, but the collaboration with the city of Miami is solid and things are happening there, and you know, an office there will probably be inevitable, but I can't tell you when right now.
That makes perfect sense. Being present in the internet hub that the mayor in Miami has a vision of creating. And I really do see Miami as being a rival to California and Silicon Valley in the near future. Next one. Will the Launchpad have a tire system which is based on your EGLD holdings, or will it be based on your MPAD holdings?
So this is not officially announced right now, but definitely we want to give more opportunities to those who have a bigger stake in the Elrond ecosystem, right? So I think that the holdings of Eagle, whether it's staked or not, I think it's not decided yet, but definitely this will be involved. About the MPAD token, there's not much I can say right now. This is an ongoing discussion that we need to carefully assess and then put forward to you with like all the clear and finalized details. So we learned the lesson with the MEX token. I think there were a few changes that have happened since like we announced it, with how it works and how it will be a vesting schedule. I think it was initially 8 weeks, and then snapshots happened over 12 weeks instead of 8 weeks, and so on. So I'm not going to give any of the internal discussions right now, just because I don't want to confuse you guys. Just, you know, wait for the announcement. It will come in due time.
Makes sense.
Okay, my turn to pick here. So we have one from Catalin, 13 likes. So what do we consider adoption for the Elrond network, and when can we consider there is actually adoption for the project? Will it be like when 1 billion people using Eagle or so on? I love Eagle, and I love to know that we touched the non-returning backpoint. All right, great one. So I think the easiest one, I think it was Metcalfe's law, I think, with the network effects. Basically, the number of users for a product determines its value and adoption, right? And I think the most important metric to watch here is the number of non-zero Elrond accounts, right? I mentioned earlier we're like 600,000 something right now. You can also see this figure in the growth page, and I think we're just getting started. And I think Mayar will play a big role of putting Elrond in the hands of so many people, and then with so many people who have jobs and businesses themselves, they'll say, "Hey, this is not only a cool app on my phone. This is also something that I can do for work," and they will deploy business cases on it. And I think, you know, the network effects will continue to grow. So I think this is the most important metric to watch: the number of accounts.
679,000. Almost 700,000.
Easy.
Okay, my turn. Sever, sorry, man, you're the star today. Can you tell us if any non-crypto space project is coming on the Elrond network? Even a yes or no will suffice, but a spoiler will be even better.
Non-crypto project?
Yeah. Non-crypto space project.
Yeah. So... yeah, I mean, there are a number of examples. If you look now in the ecosystem map, right? Like some partners there. There are partners there that have nothing to do with. So like not nothing to do, because they all have something to do with blockchain one way or the other. But they are expanding to integrate blockchain technology and not natively building, I don't know, a DeFi project, right? Like these are, you know, DeFi projects like a token and smart contract and yields and whatever. I mean, fine, those are nice experiments, and I love them, and I love to see them happen. But we always built Elrond to be part, so like a technology to be part of the broader internet stack. So we're actually looking mainly at non-blockchain crypto companies, non-blockchain companies to integrate blockchain technology so they can, you know, improve the services that they offer to their customers and so on. There will be coins created, there will be DeFi projects, but our main goal here is to bring, let's say, legacy business onto the blockchain. This is where adoption is, because those guys have customers, those guys have use cases, those guys have products, and it makes sense to them to migrate and integrate the technology that can lower their costs and increase their efficiency and security. And these are all the three things when you make money as a business. You either generate more revenue, you reduce costs, or you mitigate risk by increasing the security. And blockchain offers all of that. So this is what we're fighting for, and this is our goal.
Solid yes. Okay. Next one.
Okay. Oh. Ah, there you go. So Jose Manuel Fernandez Canon. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Hey, Jose. So he asked, how can we explain in a simple way the benefits of blockchain and Elrond to professionals working in FMCG companies? FMCG. What is this? Fast moving consumer goods, right? So like retailer or whatever. Okay. Products that are sold quickly and at a relatively low cost. Okay. So FMCG, so like retail and so on, services, utility companies and so on. I would also like to understand that what possibilities are there in market research. All right. So great question, Jose, right? It ties exactly into what I was mentioning earlier, that we're working, we're trying to build, to bring real businesses onto the blockchain, right? So there are a number of things that any company, so all companies have in common. You know, they have balance sheets, they have employees, they have salaries, they need to make payments, they need to accept payments and so on. So, you know, all of these, like, you guys know what blockchain is all about. So, like, blockchain can definitely improve all of these aspects to make them more secure, more efficient, more inexpensive. And then for every different kind of business, so particular business unit, there are specific use cases involving blockchain technology. So, like, for FMCGs, like fast-moving consumer goods, I would assume that has to do more with supply chain, right? I have to assume that it has to do also with like innovative in-store payment methods, like the kind of Amazon stores with like with no teller or no cash register, just put in the product in the
basket,
just leave, right? So, like, obviously, there's like a payment thing in there involved, and whether you top up an account or pay with a credit card and so on, you know that the blockchain is always going to be faster and more inexpensive. So, all of those things, utility companies, the first thing that comes to mind is metering, right? So, like, metering, you know what happens when, you know, you have pipelines in the field or electric boxes, fuse box, whatever you call them, and then there's a metering there, and if you guys are familiar and have been in the field, you've seen those seals with lead and a stamp and, don't touch this. It needs to be tamper-proof, right? And obviously, we know that blockchain technology can also act as a black box for any kind of system, right? Because, well, not a black box in a sense that you don't see what's in it, but rather that, you know, the data once put there cannot be destroyed, right? So obviously, you can imagine inexpensive blockchain technology such as Elrond serving as a black box for any metering that can save the data at any hour, any minute, or whatever.
In real time.
And then you can just, someone can go there and try to tamper with it or whatever. They won't be able to tamper with the register for it, right? So, like, so many use cases out there, right? Jose is also asking, like, can I understand the possibilities there are in market research? So, like, this is such a broad question. It's like a blockchain question. It's not an Elrond question. So I'll be happy to deal with it maybe at some other point in some other format. But I think for now, I will stop here and let's take the next one.
Okay. Sebastian is saying, with so much optimism going on and so much to be delivered, is Elrond an all-in project? Will the saying, don't put all your eggs into one basket, be demolished by Elrond? This is a very good one. I personally have a great amount of my investment in Elrond, but I have also other investments. So although I personally believe Elrond will be one of the leading blockchains in the end, I don't think there will be only one blockchain in the end. I think there's going to be other blockchains, and the inter-blockchain communication will help bring this new technology to everybody. Of course, Elrond is an awesome project, and we all know the way it was built, right? It solved the blockchain trilemma, decentralization, scalability, which is huge, and security with secure proof of stake. But that doesn't mean that we should only look inwards. You know, always when you build and you interact with other projects, you bring more value. And I think this is a personal decision for anybody. You know, I would not be able to advise anybody to go all in on Elrond or any percentage. In my personal portfolio, Elrond, of course, holds the highest percentage. But that is a personal decision that everybody has to do by himself, making an informed decision, looking around and seeing the trajectory of projects. And I don't know, Sever, if you have a different opinion on this.
No, I think it's smart, you know, not to put your eggs in one basket. But it's, you know, this is not financial advice, but I think it's I think you should think about what drives the value of an investment and how much of your net worth do you want to expose yourself with to it, right? If it's 100%, what are you doing? Are you giving us your life? I mean, what is this, right? Or are you giving someone else your life, right? It never should be more than 1 or 2% of your total net worth value. And you should always, you know, just make sure that you stay safe out there, right? So blockchain is awesome. Crypto is awesome. But it's, you know, always try to keep things in balance, right? And anyway, don't try to take financial advice from strangers. I don't say this story enough, but it's true. And it took me a few years to get over it. I started off as a self-made crypto genius millionaire, and then I immediately lost it all. So I started with a few $10,000 or something. I made it in the $3 million with the ICO boom in 2017. I was like, I was a genius, right? And I proceeded to lose it all. I lost everything, right? Because I didn't practice risk management. I didn't practice diversification. I wasn't cautious. I wasn't taking profits. Like, oh, this is going forever. I'm a genius, you know. I never thought of myself that. I never thought that I made money just because I was in a middle of a bubble. I thought I was a genius investor. And then when I lost the money, I tried to blame it on someone else. Like, oh, the project lost money, and that was a scam, and they didn't deliver, or whatever. But it was all me. It was all me, right? So like, I think it's important to think about all of these things and make financial decisions in a calculated manner. Don't go all in. Don't ape in. Don't be a degen. I mentioned ways of like, you know, shortcuts to getting wrecked. And crypto has like so many of those.
So many.
Never touch leverage trading. Like, why? You know, that's just like betting. Don't gamble your life away. You're working hard to earn that money and just, you know, make informed decisions about it.
Informed decision.
Yeah, always.
Okay.
So it's my turn then. Jim Waddington. Hey, Sever, can I politely ask delegation in legacy in future time frames? And if it ceases, do we receive notice? He's a very early ERD adopter, and I'll be sad to say goodbye to the amazing Elrond wallet in favor of the shiny new kid, Myar. Or do we have to? Okay. So Jim here also writes, like, he's like he entered Bitcoin when he was 52 years old, and he's now 65.
Crazy.
Does not compute, right? 13 years. I don't know. All right. So anyway, so cheers, Jim, if you're watching this. Thanks for the question. I have probably more gray hair than you do, whatever. So you're never too old for blockchain. You're never too old for anything. So when it comes to delegation, so like the legacy delegation, I hope you mean staking, like legacy as it shows up in the Elrond wallet, right? So like there will always be an Elrond wallet, and there will always be the smart contract for legacy delegation. So what will happen is that, you know, that the smart contract for legacy delegation, so when you put e-gold in there, it goes as delegation, as stake on top of the Elrond foundational nodes. As you know, the Elrond foundational nodes are servers that are operated by the Elrond team or the Elrond foundation, but the stake for them, so like the 2,500 e-gold plus top up, is coming from the communities, like from people who actively delegate. So what happens there is that we will gradually shut down and remove servers from that pool. So I think we removed 500, was it already? Anyway, we removed kind of like a big number of servers, like 300 something, and then 50 more recently. Anyway, so we will keep removing those servers until none are left. So what will happen is that people will have an economic incentive to move out of those pools, because then the APR will decrease. Because what happens when the pool, the size of the pool stays the same and the number of nodes decrease. This means that the amount of base APR decreases, and it's mostly top-up APR. So you see how that will go more towards 14% than towards 20%, right? So the more nodes are removed there, like the less economic incentive will be for people. So Jim, when you see your APR decreasing and you're no longer happy with it, just look in the web wallet or the Myar wallet if you want, and just select the staking provider with more APR and just move towards them.
Sounds great. Okay, I'll take one now. Alex is saying, will it be feasible in the future to migrate projects from Ethereum to Elrond blockchain? And the answer is a solid yes. Once you migrate, once you mint the same amount of tokens on the Elrond blockchain, you can have the same properties and the transaction take a lot less fees. So it makes so much sense to migrate a project to the Elrond blockchain. But of course, it's not something that people can do like that in a snap of finger, right? The adoption of the Elrond blockchain is happening steadily. There are lots of projects that are interested in building actively on Elrond. So it's just the next natural step, in my opinion, for some projects to migrate to the Elrond ecosystem, depending on the number of transactions that are needed and the number of fees that are spent on Ethereum, for instance. But Elrond, I think, is a next level ERC20 platform, you know, with the ESDT. It's so much better, I think. And the fact that you can transfer value natively, like you would transfer e-gold, that's not happening on the Ethereum. If you want to transfer a token on the Ethereum network, you need to interact with the smart contract and tell the smart contract, hey, these tokens that are assigned to my address, assign them to this different address. So the fact that on the Elrond, you don't need to do that. You transfer them natively because you actually have native ownership, like we were talking before, real ownership of those tokens. So to me personally, it makes a lot of sense.
I would add here like two things. So first of all, looking at Ethereum projects to migrate to Elrond, it's kind of like fishing, like all of these projects fishing in the same barrel, right? When there's like an ocean of opportunity out there. So, you know, we're not focusing on this like our core strategy. And also there are like, there's the second point here. We need to consider the Ethereum. We need to consider the Ethereum virtual machine, the EVM. So it's like the EVM is like this virtual computer that runs Ethereum smart contracts. And the Elrond virtual machine is completely different to that, right? Ethereum virtual machine, so it was created a few years ago when Ethereum was launched, when smart contracts were thought of for the first time. And, you know, Vitalik said, we need a purposely built programming language that has never been done before, and we need an own virtual machine and so on. So they created EVM, and everything right now is running on EVM. And all these projects who are fishing in the same barrel, like I was mentioning before, they try to have EVM compatibility, which is kind of like trying to, you know, build new stuff around the steam engine, you know, when, you know, you have electric engine right now. So like, that doesn't make sense. And even Ethereum 2.0, you know, Ethereum 2.0 is moving towards a web assembly virtual machine, exactly like the one that we have. We also have a web assembly virtual machine, a WASM virtual machine. So the ETH2 virtual machine is going to be called eWASM, like E from Ethereum and then WASM from web assembly, because they too are seeing something that we already not only saw before, but also already acted on, that in order for the world developers to be able to integrate blockchain technology, we don't need blockchain developers, right? We don't need those mystical creatures who are able to know Solidity and to write a smart contract. And there are so few of them that their opinion matters, like as if they're like the world leaders and so on. And then it's worth paying hundreds of thousands of dollars per year for a developer to write a smart contract and so on, right? So I'm not saying anything bad about Ethereum and Solidity developers, not at all. I think they're fantastic people to have onboarded such a great technology so early. But I'm saying that it's not sustainable. So like the Solidity developers out there, they're like 0.01% of the total amount of developers out there. So like,
I think more zeros. Those,
yeah, all those developers out there, and they're growing by the day. They know Java, they know C, they know Rust, and all these very popular programming languages, all of which compile down to WASM, by the way, which is to mean that all the developers in the world can write smart contracts in language, in programming languages that they already know, and then deploy them on the Elrond network, right? And I think this is so incredibly powerful, right? But also, so it's incredibly powerful because we're fishing outside of the barrel into the ocean of opportunities, and then this will make it easier for any developer to build on Elrond. But also, this makes it hard for existing Ethereum projects to move to the Elrond network, right? You will see them. So like you see, I don't know, Aave is moving to Polygon, right? Why are they moving to Polygon? Just because it's easy to do so. Because Polygon is EVM compatible, so all they have to do is take their smart contract, smart contracts from Ethereum, copy them and deploy them on Polygon, and they migrated, right? At no extra cost and no adaptation and testing and whatever. So that's easy for them right now. But I think also this is like a small cycle that will soon be forgotten, right? Because not even Ethereum themselves are further developing the Ethereum virtual machine. So it literally has no future. So why would they even focus on trying to bring people from there? So like a lot of them will come, and we're discussing with a number of them, but the bulk of them will just kind of like stay in this barrel until the barrel becomes irrelevant. So like when the migration to Ethereum 2.0 will happen, I'm not really sure what's the goal with the smart contracts running the legacy, but I assume they will be irrelevant.
Right. Ethereum was great, a great transition point, but we're moving forward in the future. Right. Your turn. Have any more questions?
I have a bunch of them. It's almost 11. Jesus Christ. Okay.
Let's maybe take five more.
Yeah. So I have five more of them here. So like Dragos asked a bunch of questions like in one tweet, and I said I will take them because I think a lot of people have them. When can we see eGold on Coinbase? Right? Like everyone is asking that. Someone else said the question in the thread, like Coinbase has been listing all these shit coins. Like why not Elrond? Right? So we noticed Coinbase listing a lot of coins. Also, we noticed the effect on the price that it has lately. I don't know if you watched it, but it was kind of like negative to what people expected. So like whenever a coin was announced to be listing on Coinbase, book, it went down. So I don't know. The simple answer here is that it's not up to us. So there's not more I can comment on that. US on-ramp solution. So buying eGold with fiat from the US, especially in Myar. So I think we're close on that one. It's not a hard, it's not an easy topic. I saw Kevin tackling the topic in the YouTube comments earlier, with regulations and so on. It's just mountain after mountain after mountain, but we're climbing it. So it's coming. When will Myar exchange be functional on the mainnet? 2022? Not at all. So we're testing this internally right now, quite heavy, and also with a number of volunteers from the community. Don't volunteer; we have enough testers. Thank you. So, and I think we've been making super, super big improvements. So, what's left to do now is to fix, or rather, address all the open user experience in UI issues. Like the smart contracts and the logic there is done, and it's working great. So expect it to come, I don't know, this autumn latest. Ethereum and Bitcoin will be available on Myar exchange from start. No, not from start, but with bridges and, you know, converting Ethereum and Bitcoin into ESDT tokens, we can expect them to come. Why are there roadmap delays? So we haven't updated the roadmap in a while. This we acknowledge, and it's on our roadmap of things to do, but with so many things happening, I think just updating the roadmap on the website is not really a priority. No, there are so many things outdated on the website and so on, but all the website guys are working on Myar exchange. So like asking them to change the roadmap, like, get out of here. All right. Any plans for expansion in terms of like resources and so on? So I mentioned in the beginning, Elrond started off with like, I think there were like 12 people, like the first extended team. obviously it was just Benny and Luciano in the beginning. And we are now 62 people, I think, like internal Elrond. And then there are a bunch of other companies working in tandem with us, which makes the manpower go closer to, I don't want to say a number here, but it's much larger than 62, I mentioned earlier. Okay. Thank you, Dragos.
Two more here. Are there updates on Maiar card and Maiar off-ramp?
So both are work in progress, but nothing I can share with you right now. I don't want to confuse you guys with like all incorrect or incomplete information. It's work in progress. It's coming.
Okay.
They're coming. Anything else?
Yeah, I've got someone here from Sean Williams. How, when will the Max token become available for purchase? Will it be at the time the exchange is launched, or will it be a pre-launch release through Maiar wallet or an exchange?
All right. So I think I need to give a bit more context here with the Max token. I think it's important that everyone understands. So first things first, when will Max be released? It will be released on the day of the launch of the Maiar exchange. And why? So why? So the tokens that are distributed to Eagle holders right now, so like the free Max, you know that that's under a lock schedule. And the only way to lock a token is to keep it inside of a smart contract, right? So what happens is that the tokens will be inside of a smart contract and they will be associated to every address proportional to the Eagle held or staked or whatever. And people will be able to claim them, but they will be able to claim them inside the exchange and they will be able to use them inside the exchange. You will be able to provide liquidity for it and stake it and whatever, but you will not be able to sell it or you will not be able to send it to a different wallet. This is the meaning of the lock, right? The lock doesn't mean that you don't get it, but rather that you cannot sell it, right? Which is very important, right? Which is very important because then, because what it means is that like the lock schedule, perhaps not many people understood this. So like you get the full amount of Max that is available to you, like the number you see now on the exchange, you will get it on day one, but you will only be able to sell it or transfer it as it unlocks, which is like 10% after 30 days and then gradually 50% more each month after 1 year, right? So, but you will be able to use this whole amount to, you know, to stake and to provide liquidity and so on. So we wanted to have this mechanism because, you know, we want to have everyone be a part of Max and have a stake in it. But there's also a risk when you give away a token to everyone that a lot of people will just say, oh, thank you for the free money, dump it and buy, right? So we didn't want to create a negative mechanism which can totally hinder adoption. Like if the token price is tanking and there's no demand for it and so on, like the exchange won't take off, right? So we wanted to give the token to as many people as possible, but also we wanted to make sure that the token economy can take off. So we implemented this lock mechanism and we said 1 year. Why? Because if you look at the history of Uniswap and Sushi and Cake, Pancake and whatever, all those popular platforms out there, it's mainly after 1 year they were able to establish themselves, their products with a user base, and then they saw their token economy really taking off, right? So we said, well, if it takes 1 year for the economy to take off, let's give the token to everyone right now, but let's also wait until they are able to sell it or to part with it, to place this kind of like moment in the future where, like, you know, if you just there was this thing in the Bible, right? With like the three slaves, they're giving money by the masters and one of them just buries it, right? And the other one, like they go and they trade it and they make more money out of it. So like they end up, obviously, the one that buried, you bury one coin, you have one coin. But if you do something with it, you know, by the time passes, there are high chances that you have more of it and there's more value than just by burying it or selling it immediately, right? And that's the goal also here, right? To make sure that we give everyone the opportunity to engage with the exchange in kind of like a free way, if you want, because you didn't purchase the token, but you have it and you cannot sell it. So why not, you know, play around with it and why not create value for the exchange and for the ecosystem? So we think that this mechanism will really, really help the exchange take off and generate volume and attract liquidity also from other projects and also users from other projects. I think it's a pretty smart mechanism. And I think once people understand why Max is important and what you will be able to do with it, in terms of like decisions that you can make for the ecosystem and so on, obviously people will jump on the token, and those who want to jump on the token will also be able to do so on day one, because there will be EGLD Max pools available there. So people will just be able to swap EGLD for Max on day one.
That, I think, is a fabulous answer, and maybe is a great answer to close the Q&A. Do you have any other questions you want to take on your side? Or I think we're getting close to 2 hours, so I wouldn't push the limit too much.
I don't even have time to watch like a 30-minute episode. So I think we're asking a lot from the community. So thank you, people, from being here. I also have the stream open on the other screen. I see like 180 people watching, which is crazy. Thank you. I don't know what you guys are doing right now, but I feel that we're sharing this moment. So thank you so much. I hope I was able to share a bit of knowledge and satisfy some of the curiosities. I'll try to take other questions from my Twitter timeline, or you know, just DM me on Telegram or tag me. Don't DM me. Tag me with your questions in Telegram, and I will be able to then reply at my own pace, but also put the answers there for everyone to see. So you know, happy to share this information. And thank you guys for being here. Thank you, Eddie, for inviting me.
Thank you, Sever, very much. It's been wonderful to be able to spend a couple of hours with you here. And I know we could go on and on, but like you said, you know, we're asking too much of people. It's almost 11 p.m. here. My kids are probably waiting to go to bed. Yours are probably in bed. And I'm sure everybody's got other things to do. But Elrond does take up a huge part of our lives, and it's a project that deserves involvement from everybody, and we try to do what we can to bring value to the project. That's why we created this open format so that we can have these kind of casual conversations, not at gunpoint, not strict, you know, just casual conversations to be able to spread the word about Elrond and what it can do for everybody. So thank you again, Sever, for taking your time. I know you have a very busy schedule. I know you never sleep. But it's very appreciated from us and from all the viewers. And we hope to see everybody on the next episode of Elrond Talks. Until then, have a great Friday night. Thursday night. And a great weekend, and I'll see you next time. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. All the best.